Basically, they're the safety and security officer. They're doing the inspections, making sure things are being put back in right. They're doing basically the quality control, tagging the grates as they're coming out. And some of these grates are interchangeable, most of them. Some of them are not, so they're going to have to be mapped and tagged so they can bring them back. So a lot of core time is just going to be standing around supervising the actual construction crews that are just taking these things out. Then there's also the structural crew craning these things out of the components. So then you go to the budget, and the budget, you know, I tried to break it down as much as I can. This is where comments could be used. You know, a lot of the core labor, I took a stab at a lot of this stuff. In terms of the actual rate per hour, some of those are pretty good estimates. Some of those are just trying to make a guess. The higher ends are the ones I try to make a guess at. I always make my budget by hour, by task, and then I double it. That's what I always do, and then I always somehow come up, I'm always blowing my budget. So that's me making an estimate of what I think it's going to do, and then I double it. And then I added 40% to that. So I'm trying to make these as conservative as possible. But you can see a lot of money in this project. So it's not going to be cheap to put these coatings on these grates. It's going to be what we kind of thought based on the literature, based on other work. It's about, you know, $130 a square meter.
But what's the alternative? You don't put these coatings on.
No. Well, but yes. That's what you need to determine. So how much is it going to cost to take these gratings out and manually clean them and put them back in? Because what's going to happen, the muscles are actually going to attach in the bottom of these gratings more than they're on the top. Because they're sitting here, the water's, I mean, that's where they're going to go. So you're going to have to either lift them up, tilt them, and scrape them down, and then put them back in. And their bisel threads, you want to get the whole thing off. So manually cleaning is a pain in the rear. I mean, I had all my gear from San Justo we have to clean. And in that experiment, the boat and the panels and the PVC, it's like 2 days of scraping. It's muscle death. But so that's a good question. You know, how much are the other options going to be? What are the other options? I mean, but so with this number, it's a huge number. I mean, $1 million is an enormous amount of money. Yes.
Okay. I have a question on the painting prep part. Do you scrape down the bare metal before priming, or is that just to make it smooth so it will stick?
So you do blast it. You're gonna blast it to near white. You're gonna do a chemical clean. It's not new galvanized, which is better. So you'll blast it to near white, and then you'll put your prime on. You'll put a second coat of the prime, which is an epoxy, which is your protective element, and then you'll go to the tie coat and the top coat.
Okay. Did you consider any of the picketed leads?
I did not. The picketed leads, I'm looking at in terms of the structure where you raise those up out of the water. The ones that are bolted in are going to be more difficult, but and they get pretty heavily fouled with plants, is my opinion. So you guys go out with pitchforks and scrape them down. Mm-hmm. So that's a cleaning technique that would have to be modified with the application of these coatings. Mm-hmm. I would think the picketed leads are more manually cleaning. You might be able to lift them up and power wash them off. That would be great. Power washing works great. It'd be quick, easy, and you wouldn't impact the galvanized. So it'd be cheaper to just power wash out.
I didn't hear the results on the wear test that you were doing, where you put it in the reservoir. What were the results on that?
So we pulled out, and so take a step back. I first tried to do this in the lab. Mm-hmm. So I reared the muscles in the lab and glued them to little monofilament leashes and stuck them on my panels.
Your muscles were
It was funny. They, you know, first I glued them right to a nut, and they didn't like that. But they'd go in a little circle. But then I glued them to a little leash, and they would drag it around in a circle. But they attached to the concrete and the crystal seal. They didn't attach to any of the fatalities, but I had mortality in my vinyl paint treatment. So I had them in 2 gallon tanks. So I had mortality. They would attach, but before I did, you know, I would let them run for like anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 months. And in that time period, they would attach after like 2 days, but they would die. So we took it to the field. So the field, I just got the results. September, we just pulled out the first time. So I haven't done any analysis on the data. So we have, we're going to do, you'll do surface area, image J analysis on the photos. I measured the force to remove the muscles, measured the shell length, and I have a ton of data. I don't have any figures for you or any charts. I can tell you that they didn't attach the fabulous. The fabulous, all of them were awesome. The ones that did attach, they were attached to algae. The vinyl is the one you really are concerned about, and they love it.
So what was that that you just showed us on those panels?
Was that shear release.
That's shear release. So that's shear what you're talking about there. And it's fairly soft. So, Bob, you were asking about longevity of the shear.
I'm just wondering if it should be something on a small scale test in the fish weight, like maybe a one small section of grading or something, and see how it actually wears in the flow.
Before we go down that path, I have a question, and that's about avoidance. I didn't see anything about salmonella avoidance tests in any of the literature that I had from Tammy.
That's in my next steps. Is one of the next steps. I mean, it has to be funded, and there has to be need for it to be funded. Mm-hmm. And it's a relatively easy test. But do these coatings affect swimming behavior of the salmonella?
Looks like the leaching and the amount that gets leached out is very low. So, although those were pretty greasy.
These were greasy. I mean, these are, I wrap them in, I mean, they're out of the paint shop and just, but yeah, you're right. So some of these, they're either going to be a fluoropolymer-based top coat, which is like your non-stick cookware, or it's a silicone. These are silicone-based.
That's silicone, right.
So the silicone ones, they have a little bit of silicone oil that's not bound in the coating matrix. And over time, that exudes out into the environment. So when you look at silicone oil, in terms of environmental toxicity, it doesn't have really a toxic effect.
Mm-hmm. Right, I didn't see a toxic effect, but there's extremely low aqueous solubility, so we're in parts per billion, although salmon can...
They might be able to sense it.
In that level,
yes.
So, or at least in parts per million.
And lamprey might be effective. really young lamprey, I shouldn't say that, if you had a huge amount of this buildup, because it absorbs the sediment and sinks right away. It hits the water, absorbs the particles, and out. So if you had like a spill, it would, right below that spill, you'd have a development on the sediment top, that could impact things like burrow down.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I'm more concerned about just fish avoiding the ladders after we coat them with this stuff. So that's my biggest concern about implementation. Of course, the dowels would be the worst place because these ladders are probably the biggest bottleneck we have in the river. So certainly wouldn't want that to be the first place I would test. If I was going to do it in the river, I'd probably go to Gaskin Island or something like that, someplace. So, go to Bonneville. We do everything in Bonneville first. Yeah, we got lots of ladders at Bonneville. All kinds of problems and herpes there, so what the heck.
You said you were going to follow up on that part about salmonella avoidance?
Well, it's identified as a next step that must be taken.
So how were you going to do that in a field or a lab? Or
that would be done in the lab.
So realistically, if we ever got an infestation, would we just have a spare set of screens first before we went down the road of,
Would they be coated?
Well, it sounds like these coated ones have to be in a place where they're not going to get any kind of friction, interaction. Would we have just, in reality, if they came and they plugged up screens, we'd have another set to put in, pull them out, and then...
The thing is, we're looking for muscles all the time.
Hopefully have a coating available at that time.
If the muscles start to come into the system, then you're going to have a little bit of time to react. Is that time long enough to get these things coated and done, or do you need to have them sitting ready to go? That's kind of
question. Yeah, I think we need to have a
spare set. Well, that brings up another point, too. You did the where you took the Columbia water to see how fast they would colonize, right?
Right.
And what were your findings on that?
So they grow very well in the Columbia. They grow very well in the snake. They even grow in the lemon. They mostly don't grow in the lemon.
And so that was where you took the Columbia water down to?
We set up a lab in Lake Mead Fish Hatchery.
Okay.
And we basically collected water from the rivers, filtered it, chucked it down, and threw the mussels in and basically measured their growth rate.
Mm-hmm. And what time of year did you take that Columbia water? Because there's that calcium fluctuation.
Right.
Did you take
right.
it at the peak?
So where we are right now with that, with the results, that report we're waiting on is basically getting, we've got to sort that in because the water was collected at different times. So you have that confounding factor. What you really need is like...
Also, a question about the life cycle, because another factor, I think, in the growth rate would be the water temperature, too. And my I remember when we used to have the study, you know, for the feasibility of, or potential for the zebra mussel interference with our fish ways, one thing is our annual cycle, that we dewater every year. Wouldn't that give us enough time to the zebra, let's say, they colonize the gradings, but then we have the winter, we could kill them off without the coating, and it's not necessarily, is there any methodology besides removing the diffuser gradings from their places and scrape it manually? What about applying steam, hot steam? I recall some of this.
But that kills them, it doesn't remove them.
Right. But we only want to kill them, because later when we activate the fishery, it's going to flush itself into the river. I hope that's acceptable. I don't know if there's any environmental impact from that.
You wouldn't need this. I mean, you dewater your... Let's just talk about the AWS diffuser. So you dewater that structure for a month and a half. They're going to die. I mean, so now you've got dead mussels that are not going to detach. I mean, if they're not going to detach, I don't... The flow rates in that diffuser grade, they're not going to get pulled off. Those dead mussels are going to stay there. Then you go to another settlement cycle from the next year, and it's just going to come
the shell accumulation. So you're saying you want to see the shell accumulation underneath the
diffuser chamber. I would imagine you can kill them off.
So what's the next step?
Easily, but you've got to get them off, because otherwise then next year you may have an operational problem where, I mean, you get clogging and then these pump up, and I mean,
not all of them, no.
You're getting aging clams, aren't you?
So
aging clams.
Yeah, we do have some in certain places, but
they're all over.
Yeah. We don't really have an operational issue that I'm aware of.
Sure,
in some
really
cases, they actually get
right.
flushed out.
Okay, so one grading in there. So
once you get the mussels, they're going to be there. Not only there, but throughout the plant.
Right.
But
the next,
well,
before we even allow you to do this test, we're going to have some kind of fish data.
Yeah, we're going to have to have the... I mean,
in a fish way.
We will require some information.
It would be possible that our annual maintenance cycle actually will take care of it by itself without any molding or... Yeah.
But our annual maintenance is going to be just cleaning all of them off.
Now let's
and dealing with that.
Let's address Steve's
right
study
now,
here.
So that's what I heard was that there's a product, they're looking at the product, it works well from the zebra mussel and the quagga mussel standpoint. It may be a little soft, there may be some issues with it working in the field, that you have put together a cost estimate for the Dalles Dam as a site to possibly test this. What we would like to have is some information on avoidance. Probably the toxicity work looks pretty good. Avoidance, I'm not so sure about. That's a different bar completely. We need to look at that. And then certainly would want to talk about if we were going to try this someplace, I would not want to use the Dalles East Ladder as a guinea pig.
No.
Maybe the North Ladder.
Maybe the North
Ladder. Yeah. You know, something like that. But certainly not our, bottleneck ladder.
One or three panels, not 300.
And you test
pilot,
it out,
pilot
and
it in,
pilot
it
in, unless it's like, oh my god, you know, they're here, we gotta do something. But
right.
Exactly.
Look, the bigger perspective of kind of operations of the fishways, I mean, is this a place you want to start focusing your effort on diffuser grading? Is that the spot to look?
Yeah, that's a good
question. Are there other places that are going to impact fish immediately because they're going to be scratching themselves as they make their way up the fishways? So perhaps applications of concrete portion of the fishway might be more important.
ESPS
and
ES.
I'm just
cooling water.
Out.
Yeah,
portions.
Yeah. How they deal with
all
these
skills.
My passes.
I'd like to leave with two comments. So one to yours about the long-term kind of test. So we do have these panels still in the Columbia, in the Port of Campos Oswego. So, you know, we're hopefully to get enough data to actually look at them over time. So that's one aspect. So short of putting them into a component for a trial test, we're generating some data in the main stem that we can apply.
What are those? Where are they? Like in the bulk slips? In between?
No. So if you look at that number one, it is an aerial view of the port of Camel. So you've got a breakwater dock that runs parallel with the flow. And we're at the west end of that, on the riverside, and we're hanging down vertical, bolted to the wall. Yeah, so the current is going right on.
Good spot.
Yeah, and you got trees and logs that come down, and it's
that's a good spot.
Columbia River. So we do have data there. We have enough panels out. The experiment goes for 39 months, and then we have extra panels out if we're interested in longer term data. So that's one thing I wanted to end with. The second is, you don't have the muscles now. And I don't like to be reactive, but we don't know how well they're going to be. Presumably they're going to get here. Presumably they'll get here.
Presumably they'd be here already. We've already found them in the basin, right? But we're not seeing them anywhere in the basin.
No. He's not in the Columbia River Basin?
Yeah. No. I mean, have you not been detected on boats, right?
Well, okay, in the established in a water body. We haven't found populations in a water body yet. But you're looking for a needle in a haystack. So when the key, I think, is developing, getting. So when they do get here, in theory, we'll have, like you said, some time to respond. The issues, though, are like these coatings is permitting. That's a big issue that I'm seeing. And in this cost document, I did not address permitting. I waded into it, and so the costs of permitting are not addressed. So there's a lot of hiccups there. So maybe that's something that can be started now, is initiate the permitting process for...
What permitting are you talking about?
Okay, so, for example, these coatings are developed for... They were developed for use on ship holes and oceans. So they are not fit for registered for use in static freshwater systems. And they are, even though they're non-toxic, none of the ingredients are on the toxic list. They make pesticidal claims in the product label. So according to EPA, under FIFRA, they're pesticides. So one thing I've been talking to the companies is, well, hey, change your label.
No kidding.
But EPA says, well, it's the intent.
Too late.
Intent of the law. But there are like algae shading. Shade the water, change the water color. So you've got FIF registration, which is an issue. Whether or not, so a Fed, USBR, or ACE, they're going to be the ones applying it in a federal facility. So they're the ones, so we're not going to go through the state agencies probably for Clean Water Act and stuff. But then you have PUDs and other stuff. So these are kind of issues that I'm having to deal with that, you've got to do informal or formal consultation with ESA. So getting that out of the way, maybe informal, Section 7, and just get it out of the way, maybe and blanket it for everybody. And then you've got the Section 10, which is core. You've got your different states, like your hydraulic permits for Washington. So there's a lot of potential work that now could be done. Like trying to get these exempt from FIFRA would be awesome. Exempt from FIFRA. So they're not considered pesticides.
Okay.
Is something that could be done.
The avoidance issue, for the buy-off, if we do a buy-off, which I'm not sure we would, that would be the question I would ask, since I'd probably be the one doing it. So that's a specific issue that we can deal with. It would just grease the skids for us.
Okay. And that seems like it'd be really easy to do. You generate, panels.
Sam would pull up one side or the other side. If they go the other way, it's a problem. That's pretty simple. BPA is funding this, is that?
BPA is funding us.
So that would be a critical test, considering that the fish waste we're trying to put in. It looks to me like just looking at this is not enough, I realize, but that the toxicity concerns have been addressed pretty well.
if it got to the point where we'd implement it in a fish way, would BPA, where is BPA? Fund it?
I think they probably would.
They continue to fund it?
I don't know about the financing of it, but...
Okay.
Way back there.
I would have had to have reviewed that ahead of time. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, if this is the only way to keep the dams running...
But right now, they're only funding for
usually
this.
Usually, something like that would be super high. But I wouldn't want that.
Depends on how. If we were just, throwing them out there just in case, it probably wouldn't be so good. But if you definitely had a problem.
So I have one question, just background-wise. Obviously, Giro Rec has a lot of experience with this. Your path forward, how does this parallel some of their experience? I mean, would they be likely to get a permit for using these if they're in an area with an ESA species? And then, you know, which of these would they find preferable for similar hydroelectric plants?
I mean, shouldn't they already be using these somewhere?
Covered
all these issues except for salmon.
Over there, I mean, what Steve Watkins ought to be doing over there in the Kansas City area.
So BOR is, they are very concerned about ESA and drinking water. They are not currently doing any full-scale applications of coatings. They're still in kind of looking at what are we going to do. They've really kind of gone down the Pseudomonas Sequinox route. That's a really cool product for controlling things in like a pipe. It's really cool. It doesn't impact other bivalves. So corbicula, native unionids, it gets into the epithelial cells of the stomach and just bleeds them to death. Just zebra quack. I'm really curious, though. They haven't explained how it works, so I don't like it. But it's going to be like the Monsanto. Zequinox is there. They're looking at UV. They're looking at all kinds of high flow filtration. So in terms of learning from BOR, it's huge. Metropolitan Water District is also doing stuff.
Okay.
They are unique, though. They chlorinate right at their intake structure, and they're drinking water, so it's different. But BOR, definitely, I mean, follow them by all means. And Alan Skaya, he is the lead on the research for the coatings. In terms of Army Corps, they did a lot of work with zebra mussels back in the day, like the 1990s, these coatings are all new, so they wouldn't be applicable. But they, Ontario Hydro did some work with these coatings, the share release, that product was the best one I had ever worked. So an older formulation, and that lasted about 10 years by Ontario. But there's no reports I can find. That's just personal com. So.
All right. Well, I think appreciate you coming to talk about this and all the work you're doing. It's going to be very important. Hopefully, I'll be retired by the time it comes down the pipe. But it's going to be a nightmare. It's going to be a nightmare to deal with, and very expensive.
It's going to be like mayhem.
So to wrap it up, it's going to be mayhem. Don't take. It will.
This is an appropriate use for mayhem.
Thank you. So to wrap it up, I guess we want to find out what the impact is to fish, what's the next steps, and I guess we'll just stay in touch through Bob, and maybe we can, once we get that resolved, we can start thinking about putting it into the North Shore or something.
Well, I'm thinking more about that somewhere. Once you start thinking past the concerns for biology, and then, what do you coat with this?
Right.
And then you've got to go through, it's just the grading.
So hopefully the whole
user system from, what about the units?
Think about turbine survival when the turbine tubes are coated with zebra mussels.
The blades are coated with zebra
mussels. Yeah, it's just...
Paint the entire thing is what you have to do. It's got to be done in one spray painting.
Well, there's a velocity limit.
Yeah,
what is the velocity limit?
Kind of like the portable flow scale collector.
And stuff flow is going to prohibit.
I don't think
the... But the turbines don't run continuously. The turbines are just sitting sometimes. You have to look at the cycle of maintenance and operations also.
Yeah, unit 11 is...
And don't forget, if you want pleasure, I will email you this document, this cost document. And
That's not pleasure reading, no.
Ah, come on.
Just give me the bottom line. $1 million, okay.
$1 million for...
I think it's going to be more than that.
Well, I mean, that's why I'm requesting...
That's a start.
That's a tip of the iceberg.
You know, looking at that, labor is the issue piping. With the budget.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about whether these things actually work.
Totally. Just come up with some kind of villager killing
organism.
Something. Oh, yeah. Let's introduce something that eats villagers.
That never goes wrong.
You know, some fish, there's a lot of fish that eat these mussels. So you could introduce another fish.
There you go. There you go.
All right.
What's that Chinese head or whatever?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Let's move on now to the Dalles Ice and Trash Sluiceway gate configuration. Bob Cordy, you got something to tell us?
Yes.
You've been operating that facility room?
Participants.
Well, I don't know. According to PNNL. I looked at their final report, and their recommendation is to open 3 gates over 1 and 3 gates over 8. And I'm trying to figure out, why did we decide on 3 gates over 1, 1 over 8, 2 over 18?
I think that might have happened was you were doing maintenance, and we changed that year, and then we just kept it that way because that was like the second option based on what Gary Johnson and Fenton recommended to have in this.
There's a file on that.
It was mayhem.
I kind of. Yes, there it is right there.
So.
Here you go. That's the. My one and only published scientific peer-reviewed journal article.
Hurry it up.
Oh,
yeah.
So
I'm at the bottom. So, yeah, 1 and 8 was the best, but we kind of fine-tuned that. And you were like, I remember having this discussion. It was like, there was an outage, and it's like, okay, well, let's open the other end as well. Because in that study, having the 18 or 19 was one of the alternatives that were looked at. Uh-huh. And I don't think we really thought there was a big difference.
There isn't.
As long as Unit 1 or the westernmost unit has 3 gates open with main units.
And then somewhere in the middle and somewhere towards the other end. It really doesn't matter that much.
No.
So I wouldn't lose any sleep over that.
Okay.
What's the issue? Is there a...
Well, my concern was, you know, we were operating 1 and over 1 and 5 for the longest time, and then we had PNNL's report, and I'm like, holy crap, nobody even really paid attention to the recommendations. Well, here we are again, and I'm looking at 1 and 8, and I'm wondering if we're missing something.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I think the spreading it out to the eastern side was just given that option. If anything, got stranded over there and then had a flow net.
And Tammy reminded me too that maybe the inside of the channel there's that dead spot from the last unit up inside the channel, and maybe that was a concern.
That was a concern
then
too. It was, people fish getting stranded in there.
So I don't think there's a problem. As long as the westernmost gates, 3 gates are open, whatever works, if you can stagger at 8, 17.
Yeah, I'm never too worried about it. When the unit's out, you just move it. It's not a big issue. So
okay. So
I don't think we know enough. I mean, it isn't really that fine-tuned. Our knowledge is not that fine-tuned about this. So
And I did talk to Fenton some on it, too, and he said if, you know, a good compromise might be to go 2 on 8 and just have 1 on 18 open.
Mm-hmm.
Go heavier on
flush 8. Flush out that.
Right. And then just have that 1 open on 18 just to keep it
that
flush.
That was the thought, was to flush. By having the whole thing 18 moving. Or whatever.
Well, and then there was the subs tend to hit that end a little bit sooner, too. So
we have to redo our performance center test?
I think so.
So
because it run wrong during those years. So
should we go with that change, just a 2 on 8, 1 on 18?
Sure.
Does anybody care?
I don't think there's a big deal.
Okay.
I think it's probably going in a slightly better direction, but I wouldn't bet on it. I think it's not bad.
What are we doing right now? It's 1.
It's
1.
It's 3 on 1, 1 on 8, 2 on 18.
So Bob's saying switch the.
Just switch 8 and 18.
He's saying put more towards the middle.
Right. arbitrarily.
Leave it as is.
Leave it as is?
Unless you have a rationale for changing it.
I mean,
and if we have a rationale for changing it, let's develop that rationale.
That was just Fenton's recommendation. Go heavier on 8. Yep, that was from his.
Go heavier on 8.
On 8, yeah.
Let's leave it that.
Heavier. Okay. All right, I'll put in a change form then for the FPP.
Whatever Fenton says, he's got to be right.
Yeah, that's what I figure.
Now let's go to the split flow test.
And Scott isn't here.
That's a fun one.
Darn it.
He's getting his tooth drilled.
Drill, baby, drill.
Do you want to...
So,
if you put a change form in on that, add a few words about why he thinks that's good.
Okay.
And the only thing I'm concerned about is that if we see a lot of fish approaching that east end, that could affect passage there. So it's not a big deal. There's not that many fish passing by us. So just the rationale.
Okay.
What's his rationale? Make sure he fully considers some of your lands as well as
right.
Or we could just halfway through the season when it's the subhuman time, they could just fish your back. Get a spring and summer off. Yeah.
Look good.
Are you Bob something too?
Move chain gates.
Move some chain gates. Get the chain gang.
Split flow test. Right.
What about it? Gary, by the way, and I showed up on the split flow test.
Huh.
On the Dells.
Oh.
That was a much bigger change than I expected.
Yeah.
That was a compliment.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
It happens.
Flabbergasted.
Yeah.
Can't really believe it. He's stumped. He usually says fifth grade attempt. Nice job.
That was the North Shore John Deere.
Is that fifth grade? Goes along with that.
Might be middle school.
Middle school. Thanks. I thought that was better.
Give me another year of album.
So what do you want to do about this split flow test?
That's good information. What are we doing?
So we have your analysis in there, plus we have our analysis with the, and that should be on the attachments as well.
Plug some stuff from the FFU?
No. I'm talking about our analysis of the whole month. Is that in there?
It was set.
I saw it. I think you had it.
It was only 3 emails. It was 11 megabytes. I could just cancel all at once.
That pretty, pretty blue and red graph.
It's on the website.
Yeah, there it is.
Hey, so Gary, are you going to make a recommendation?
Yeah.
So,
it doesn't help you, my dude. Well.
But here's the part you're going to.
There's a little blip. Double spikes there, so
right. So you got spill. You got a small blip with the spill, and you have 3 peaks, and the one little jump up in the spill is on a peak. Now whether or not that peak is from that spill, who knows? Bottom line is, there wasn't enough runtime to make it a valid test.
What I'm saying here with
that's the bottom line
is that. You know, some folks were making the claim that this didn't work.
Right.
And I'm saying, not so fast. Not so fast. I'm not saying it worked. But I'm certainly not going to say that spilling to redistribute fish at the Dalles doesn't work. And I'm fully aware of all the studies that have been done in the past on how the Dalles, 92, 93, 94, 97, you know, you've got all kinds of studies on that, but I also think it makes a hell of a lot of sense that if you spill water for attraction, the fish will use it. We tried, 4.5 or 4.3 back in the early 90s, didn't see much of an effect, but, and a little criticism there is that was a one day. You guys looked at 2 hours, which is, you know, at the entrance time, at the time the fish would enter to get to the count station, right, and looked at, you know, throwing that out and then looking at, but that's, again, that doesn't get you the sensitivity, or doesn't get you the edge effect that might occur as fish are staging the tail race. Oh, yeah. And so a one day, and I kind of, you know, again, this is really too thin to really say much about, but that first day you didn't see an effect, whole day. The second day looks like an effect, second, third day looks like an effect. I mean, you saw it species by species by species. So it looks like there's something there. If you had, if we had done a block design test for 2 days or 3 days in each block, we may have seen something with that 4K. I don't know. We didn't have a, you know, wall wasn't in at that time, neither of the walls, and so there's a lot of things that have changed right from those days to today. All I'm saying is that if we have if we'll continue to be successful and we get 1 million or maybe what about 2 million fall shrimp coming back in the future, that east ladder is going to be, well, you could walk across the ladder on your backs, you know, specifically.
All easily. Right.
So, I mean, that's we need to move that, I think, shift that towards the north. In September, we have no spill. We need to think about that.
I agree.
I hope that we're successful and that this continues and we see a lot of fish in September. And you know, keep in mind our stilling run was really low this year, like about half, if you look at the, you know, aggregate with the hatchery fish. Yeah. So if we start doing well with all these species and we have no spill in September, our ladders could get a little bit crowded, and well, they already are. So, you know, what I'm saying here is that I think that we shouldn't just say, oh, spill doesn't work to move fish, redistribute fish at any of these dams, and so we can't do it. I think we can. It may take more than what, you know, Christine wants to hear about or Scott wants to hear about, but it may be 10K. But in a situation where we really have a problem, I think we have to think that way. So, yeah, you know, maybe it's not every, you know, it's daytime, not nighttime. Maybe it's shorter duration, but 6 hours too. I mean, keep in mind, this was a very short duration of spill. 3K, yeah. What, 6 hours was it?
Seven
yeah, hours.
3 7-hour blocks.
Those are pretty, that's a pretty small spill amount to get an effect, yet it looked like there was an effect. So it may be that we can move some of these fish away from that ladder. I think we're going to have to. So that's what I'm saying.
At some point, we're going to have to figure out how many is too many in the ladder.
Yeah, and we're going to have to figure out how much spills enough to actually make this work. So I would think that at some point, we're going to want to be doing some tests again, like the fishery field unit did, but maybe a little more, you know, robust, maybe a little more flow, to see how well that works.
So what did we peaked out at like 60,000 a day in the...
Bonneville was 68,000.
Yeah, that was just one day.
One day.
That was total passage.
Total passage, one day. It was mayhem.
So that was mayhem.
See that? I knew that right off the top of my head.
You know that.
You don't want to go there. That. I'm just going to tell you that.
That was pretty ugly at Bonneville. And, you know, there were a lot of fish in that ladder. I have no doubt there was some effect on the run.
Gary, did you want to look at calcs, what biomass the ladder preside for?
Well, we did that early, and that's why we chose the, well, per ladder, what, 30,000 or 25,000, I think, per ladder density before we split flows at Bonneville powerhouses to get the fish redistributed there. So
we found an old document that was saying that they were designing it for 100,000 a day.
Well, I was going off of Milo Bell's recommended.
Who knows how accurate that was?
Density of gallons and all that. So we did do a pretty good evaluation and wrote that up several years ago. It should be in the
it's probably nip on this somewhere.
Minutes somewhere back. Yeah, on the website, whatever that thing is.
You can keep it organized.
Danny, can you give me a memo number?
That was before I was in charge of keeping things organized.
So, what do we do with it?
Call Cal.
Yeah, call Cal.
As I'm texting in one place.
Not going to be home for lunch.
Yeah. Sorry, honey. No lunchtime.
No, no birthday bus.
Oh,
well, the cost of
spending birthday with
the
guys.
No, especially the spillway may be very high, so. Because it's pretty obvious if you put all the water through the spillway, they will go to the north.
but you won't be producing power. So, I mean, that's just, you know, those are the extreme cases. But I don't know if there is a middle ground, because if you look at John Day North's fishway now after it was modified, it's perfect hydraulically. It has we have doubled the discharge. We have the inside the collection channel. The distribution is perfect, and it seems to, if you look from week to week or within the season, it's changing. There is no consistency. I think the fish distributing themselves kind of at random. Even that in some cases majority of fish go for the North Fishway, but it's not consistent. It's hard to attribute that to only one factor. I think it's a multiple factors, how the powerhouse operates. I don't think you can really always distill that one desired operation, you know, in this case.
Meryl,
the fish will be distributed.
Not sure.
Do you think that the Erdick model in Mississippi for John Day would be sensitive enough to pick out what's happening relevant to the fish ladders? Because, I mean, you can definitely see the broad scale 2D pattern, but, I mean, at the Dells, I was perceiving that it was more like a 3D problem, like where the, you know, adults might even be approaching, you know, deep something. And
I wasn't necessarily comparing it like oranges to oranges. This is oranges and apples, of course, John Day and the Dells, but I was alluding to the principle. I think with adult distribution, there's lots of vagueness there. You may have difficult time to... In some cases, if you have a black edge, like a snake, of course, that's pretty obvious. But if you don't have a black edge, if it varies from day to day or week to week, depending on volume and of the river, depending on the elevations, depending even maybe on fish behavior.
Yeah, because, I mean, the John Day model, what I basically brought away from that is that, I mean, at low, medium, high flow levels, you know, it's really sensitive to, like, which spill bay that you have open and, you know, like, just making a small change.
No, I wasn't talking about spill per se, because I was talking about after the spill season, with bay 2 only. It's still, sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, we're talking the Dalles here, not John Day. I sent out another thing that I don't know if everybody saw or not. Did you have a chance to send that out to me?
No, I just hold on to all the information. I don't.
What I did, I'll explain it.
I censored it.
Okay, well, what I
did. That was for me.
I looked at John Day passage from 2009 to 2013. North versus south, and I looked at, I split spill, which is the entire spill season from April 15 through, I went from 15 through August 31, anyway, and then from there after spill stopped, and looked at the percentage of passage, and up until this year, passage after spill stopped was generally extremely low, you know, less than 10%.
Yeah, you're right.
And then it just dropped off like a rock.
Yep.
But this year, after the mods, that passage stayed much higher. And for steelhead, it was almost 50-50, even after spill. So at that project, I'd say, you know, maybe that's not an issue. And I'm not talking so much about John Day, but at the Dalles, I've done a lot of work on those splits too, going way back, and with all the different changes that we've made to that spillway. And over and over and over again, when spill shuts off, that side drops off dramatically.
Yeah.
There is the potential at that dam to pull fish away from the east ladder. And the east ladder does pass the lion's share of the fish in that project. So
you can see that on this
we don't see
graph.
The vagaries there.
Are you concerned
after spill season?
Oh, after.
And this whole issue is about moving fish from the east ladder to the north ladder at the Dalles to reduce crowding. That's all there is to it.
I hear you.
So what does it take to do that? In terms of amount of spill and duration of spill. That's what we need to figure out. But I think down the road, we're going to be faced with that. Or mayhem will ensue.
Nice. Well said. And with that, going to move on.
Tied together.
So, the question is, how would we get another test? How would we get a test
or not?
Or
just call for spill.
We make a recommendation. How much? You know, it's going to be a food fight as soon as we do it. Unless we have information to identify what to do, it's going to be just.
I hate to say it, but.
Man.
It's so easy.
So you're supposed to be a test?
Well, that's the thing is.
Well, you know, I think it's worth talking through and developing some
sort of test. Well, we should, because if Pack is right and if Jack counts are from Fall Chinook are not that dissimilar to what we had last year, we could have another good-sized adult month.
Yeah, we hope it continues.
Yeah, we better figure
it
out.
It would probably be smart, too, if we're going to talk about doing a test, talk about it sooner rather than later.
Packaged correctly sounds good, and I know I'm an outsider to Portland, but you know, I thought Miro's example of redoing John Day and having it at 100% had a lot of merit with your trying to attract him to the east entrance, and maybe that should be an alternative so that the spill could be a short-term alternative with perhaps the 100%, and maybe Bonneville would find that more attractive and it would still get done what we're trying to do, better passage at the east entrance or the east ladder.
We're trying to get better passage at the north ladder.
Okay, well, whichever. I mean, I don't know your ladders, but I guess...
Question on the north. How did the CFS change?
I know. Here I am sitting next to you.
Thank you, Ann, for bringing that up.
Because these doubles, if not triple.
So it was double.
No, I agree. We need to have a conversation about this. It's going to happen again, hopefully. And when it does, we need to be prepared. So what is that going to be? So is it another task group, or is it just a sit-down discussion with...
DPA, we need to sit down and talk about, can we do a test in, and this is in September, it's at the Dalles, it's somewhat more limited.
Maybe
and I realize there's the sensitivities with Wasco and what's going on there, the FEMA, so all that stuff's out there turning, but...
The one thing, maybe, because we should be getting Fall Chinook conversion rates here pretty soon, and I would take that to get off, take a look at those numbers, because if we see a downturn in that, we might say, well, you know, part of that could have been the fact that we had so many fish going on our ladders, we had more mortality than we normally expect. So to test that, that might be a way to kick it off.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the biology.
So
why?
Yeah. Let's why set up a meeting in January.
Okay. We have until September to take up something.
And maybe plan something if we can in September as a test. Maybe not have the fish there to delay if we delay them. I don't know. All right, now we can move on.
Okay. Thank you.
To the hydrofoil test.
We're done.
We've got Jack and Eric here, been waiting patiently. Take it away.
Okay, so this was previously was brought through at Palm on March 14th, and there's been a change in the schedule because of the award process for the evaluation. And instead of the evaluation done in the late summer, fall of 2013, we now want to do that really in early spring 2014. There was a contract awarded in September. We've been coordinating with the project, and we have permission from the OPM at Bonneville for this. We've also been coordinating with the Portland District. So what we're looking for is four changes in operation. One is in, these are all outlined in the MOC that was attached. The first one is in early February for periodic operation of the corner collector. The purpose of this is to hang the hydrofoils, open the corner collector, look at how they perform in the flow, close the corner collector, make adjustments to their orientation as needed to get them tuned to the flow. And then the second change is we'd like to, if the kelp target has not been reached by March 17th. We'd like to have a corn collector open on March 17th. To give us early in the run enough behavioral data as well as forms of the hydrofoils. And then there's two outages that we're requesting for the corn collector of up to 8 hours in early April and early May. And all likelihood, those outages will be shorter than 8 hours. The reason we're requesting up to 8 hours is the contingency in case there's problems.
So when we start throwing stuff at you,
sure.
March 17th. I have no problems, but has BPA bought off on that? We can't even get them to open the corn collector early for kelp.
Yes. Heard our.
And you're going to somehow get them to buy off on the 17th?
Well, let's step back a little bit. I have,
what
we did was, in that March, we said, yeah, no problem. The idea in my head at the time was, okay, we're going to wait for the dip in the migration. We'll go in there and take the system out of service, install the hydrofoil system, set it all up, and then run it through the subcooling migration in June, July, August, whatever. Take it out later on after the corn collector closes. That was pretty benign and not really concerned about that, but this has the potential for impacting kelp passage since we don't know what the kelp response would be to having those hydrofoils in place. And then we have all the spring migrants, Chinook and Coho and Steelhead, Sockeye to worry about. And then we have two outages, which one of which is pretty early, so there's not a lot of effect. But then the other one is in May, which is right in the middle of the out-migration, so really bad time to have this thing down. So my question is, why can't we just go with the schedule we had last year, this coming year, just do it simply that way, and not have that additional effect on all of those additional, those other stocks? There's Spring Creek releases we've got to worry about as well in there because of the way they're really spaced out through the time period. I don't know where Wills is, but.
Yeah.
I wasn't worried about it. I'm supporting this. I think it's a great idea to try this thing. I've been supportive all the way. But when I saw the potential impact, and then, I don't know, Eric, if you did the spreadsheets to come up with the impacts there, but good job on that. And, the numbers. But, we're killing endangered fish to do this. And we usually don't do that for these sort of things. I mean, that's a pretty high bar. Versus doing it later in the season when I don't think you'd have any effect. You're almost completely benign, and that's when I thought we were going to do this. I know things happen and end up getting pushed and all that, but I don't have a problem with doing anything before the fish arrive, but then having those outages and even having the stuff in there when we have an unknown effect on a very, it is a good route of pass. And the other part of it is, too, in summer, sub-yearling chinook don't really use that system very heavily. Efficiency is very low, so your potential impact is very low. You probably wouldn't even measure a fish killed by it. But in earlier in the season, certainly there's a lot higher. And steelhead use it at a high rate, and so do kelts. And I don't know what the response of kelt is to this thing. The other comment was your control time. I'm not going there. We'll go there later. But for now, I'd like to see us not even do anything in the spring. Put this thing in June like we had planned last year. Run it through. I know it's slide schedules further and further back, but what's your response to being able to do that?
Okay. The problems with those shifts, one problem is we have to mod two contracts.
Okay.
Because there's this... This was awarded under two different contracts. That was not our choice. That was higher up than our pay grade. And the other issue is whether it would be unlikely that equipment would be available for the fish passage evaluation. Because the equipment that's going to be used, the Ditson cameras, are going to be moved to McNary for the lamprey work.
You know, that, okay.
That's in June.
Then I'll throw my other thought out, and that was that I didn't really see that, I mean, that's not a control. You're talking about looking at the early part of migration, different fish with the Didson, with hydrofoil in, and pulling hydrofoil out, looking at it later. Those aren't controls. I mean, you know those aren't controls. I mean, it really depends on what you're looking at, but you've got totally different fish behavior, water temperature, breed loads, everything changes over that time period that we're talking about. So
We could move.
You need a block design.
Well, that'd be tough.
To do it right, though, you really need
that'd be tough to do it because the install and the removal is up.
I guess I'm
with it. It's not going to take a lot of time to pull it out.
Do you need the biology part of this at this stage, or can we just do this as a soak time test just to see how well it works hydraulically? Now, I mean, I consider both of these. I mean, they're two different components.
Right.
I know Ryan's concerned about this thing even staying in there, flapping together,
doing
all kinds of stuff.
There's concern about how well it will.
Right.
Can be tuned.
Out there the other day, and it's like,
whether it'll maintain its tune as powerhouse changes operation.
As powerhouse changes operation, as the flow goes up and down. Powerhouse changes operation, you see the way that flow goes in there varies pretty dramatically. So, you know, those are going to be issues that I have to deal with that have nothing to do with biology.
Right.
So, just testing that part of this thing, and I know some of those are kind of unique to the Bonneville, which is not where you want to put this thing, ultimately.
Right. So, and this would be a worst case test. If it works in Bonneville, then it should work in Granite without any issues.
Well, I mean, there's another way of doing this is releasing a fish tag upstream, just looking at see how your protection helps how they behave at any time of the year, you know, especially after the bulk of the run's passed. I'm just worried about having this thing and having these effects, bulk of the run, right in the middle of the migration and affecting so many listed stocks. I mean, you're hitting every listed stock. In the fall, in the summer, we have, you know, we're some yearlings are doing very well. Not too concerned about it. All should have been doing quite well. So if you have deleterious effects, not concerned.
So you're concerned about the response?
Are you?
Not the hydrofoils in
not
the system?
As. Sorry.
You're concerned about the response with the hydrofoils in place to see if there is a biological rejection.
And that was one of the reasons for doing it real early in the run for minimal.
Yeah, it's just that you'll have it in there really during that kelp
kill
part of the, you know, our entire kelp migration.
But we also think that's an important question to be asking.
It is.
Is that if it did work and you were going to implement this on surface passage structures such as an RSW, you would want to know before you went to the expense for something to
difference?
Span a 50-foot RSW band.
We have fought, and a lot of blood has been let over getting that water collector operating for counts. So it's pretty sensitive issue. Winter steel is a different issue than up there.
It's the bottom end of the system, too.
Bottom end of the system. Those fish
survived the whole aquifer.
Pretty close to getting out of the system. Well, a lot of fish are local, and they actually do have return rates that are better than for, like, Idaho fish. So, you know, that's a... I hate to use those fish as guinea pigs. I didn't think we were going to have to. It'd be better to do this at a time where we're using fish that we're not as concerned about.
Well, I'm still struggling. I mean, maybe the reason we picked Granite last year was we didn't have time to get in it. I mean, we picked the corner because we couldn't get time to get in it. Granted,
if we know there's other reasons to do Bonneville.
I'm still struggling why Bonneville is better than
Granite. Okay, one reason is you can span the entire width with four hydrofoils as opposed to the entire width of an RSW is going to take about 16 to 18 hydrofoils.
Sure.
Second reason is you have redundancy of system. You have an existing pit tag detector downstream at Bonneville. So you can assess what the detection efficiency of the hydrofoils are, which is an important component.
There's ways around that, but you know, okay, what else you got?
Well, my biggest thought was that this is a low risk compared to the actually doing a TSW or RSW. I mean, it's just a small portion of all the fish passing Bonneville Dam. if you go to Granite, do the test there, you're dealing with a large portion of fish passing.
Now, if you do it early season. Do it early season, it's the same thing. You'll still get the kelp stuff because you still have kelp passing.
You will.
Have a Granite early season. If you're worried about double detection, you get some cheap RTs. Radio tag the fish, you'll know if the fish went over the RT, and then you'll know if you pick it up by bit tag. In other words, it makes the test a little more expensive, but it's also a way of doing it. And I mean, do you need the whole structure covered, or can you just do a part of it? That's really the question. Are you trying to get it? Is this a hydraulic test, or is this also a hydraulic plus detection efficiency, detect reading capability of the hydrofoil test? Are you trying to do both at the same time?
It's a complete test. It's a performance of the hydrofoils in the flow, detection, capability of the system, and fish response to that.
See, my other thing is I'm going, you might find at the corner reflector it doesn't work because the hydraulics are so crazy. Yeah. But at an RSW, which is where it's finally going to end up, it would work. So
that's a big question.
I'm just like going, because they're just different enough, I'd be going, I would just test it where you want to build it and just test it there, and that way you know if it's going to work or not, and that kind of gives you the path. Because, I mean, really where the big things are going to go is for TSWs and RSWs. This technology could be really great, might work great there. The corner collector, we really don't need it there.
No, we really don't need it there. I mean, it was just an opportune location.
If it's going upstream of the TSW, that's where you can deploy that, ultimately?
Right.
Yeah.
It was fairly laminar flow there, right, water-wise?
It's a lot nicer.
Nicer is not the word for it. I mean, it's not comparable to what you see in the corner collector.
It'll be
15
feet. The problem with the corner collector there is that the flows come into the corner collector at different angles depending on the unit operation. And that's the biggest issue there. But
one of the issues, Tom, with actually doing the test at Granite is the support structure involved, the kind to suspend the hydrofoil dot in the location that need to be, would be much more complex and expensive than it is at the corner collector. The corner collector would allow us to, with a fairly simple frame, it will allow us to put the hydrofoils out in the location, or the target location.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's some advantage to the corner collector. I'm just going to, if you know you want to put this in an RSW, I think you just, I don't know, I see
you
something.
Know that, yeah.
Well, I guess the one thing, just as a bottom line, I can't live with May.
So,
can't live with that.
Is that the only issue with May outage?
That's my
biggest outage.
Yeah.
Well, and Gary, I think the second outage, we probably want to do that April 11th. Wait till the spill has started, and then, because that way you still have the spill going and all that, I'd wait 3 days and do it after spill starts.
Yeah,
and
it's then not going to affect the equipment. It'd be fewer fish and no change in hydraulics.
Exactly.
So, good point. Because it was 8, was it the 8th or something like that?
And I was going to say, if you're going to take it out the 11th, that would be a spill going east, and that more fish going to
be spilling. It's not going to
change. Exactly, it won't change hydraulics.
Won't change
and then I would honestly, I'd rather have you have a longer outage and get all your stuff out at that one time and not come back in May and try to take it out in May.
Because they need the jets in the airport.
Yeah, you've got to have the jets in the air while the hydrofoil
is out. We need it early.
Well, you don't have to do that.
Take everything out. So,
but, no, I'm saying take everything out April 11th, and then that way your Jitson's ready. You pick that up to McNary and that stuff.
Yeah, you don't have that test, but I don't know that you have to have that test.
Yeah, that's true. You may not need that.
I don't think so. I think you can look at the behavior of fish as they interact with hydrofoils to get a lot of information from that. The actual would they go or not go, and I can't call it a control. It just isn't because there's too many other factors that are variables.
Okay, so
there's also a Jitson that Langsley might have available.
And we actually have a Ditson too. Okay.
So,
there are other Ditsons around.
So, well, this is.
Ours is old.
This question that I have is a SRWG question and an F-POM question. I'm
different hat.
Anyhow.
Different hack.
Change your hat.
Same people.
So, would there be support to do early season?
Not fire that SRWG.
After spill starts, pull the hydrofoils, pull the bits, and don't collect any baseline data on fish response to the corner collector as it occurs.
Or leave your hydrofoil, or leave your bits in until June.
Or leave it later.
Mid-June.
Then take find it a out. Different. Find yeah, a different I think we got to pull it before then.
Could you find a different bits in somewhere?
Maybe.
And if you can leave it in until when we're going to take it down anyway, I'm good with that. I'm not reading any of that. I'm just saying that. Whenever we were going to do it, I don't remember the date. We have a data set.
It's like, I'm going to make it.
Well, then again, a lot of sub-drilling migration. I'm trying to hit the dip, which is usually the first 2 weeks. I'm okay with that, because I don't see a problem with sub-drilling on this thing at all. So it's unbelievable.
This is mid-June
and early. I mean, we have more fish. The way the sub-drilling migration comes, it's kind of high late June, then it trails off, so you have to be careful. So earlier in June is better, but, you know, somewhere by 30 or so, I would say you're fine. Because then you start getting away from any of the steelhead. You're right, you know, you get past the 95% points for just about everything. But if we want to do that, you know, then what we're doing is we're risking kelp interaction. And if you can guarantee that it goes in the 17th of March, I'm good with that, I guess.
Yeah, I'll let them know. Yeah,
we can stand back.
Well, the nice thing is then, I guess we don't have to worry about video monitoring.
Well, I'll take
that.
Go back.
What's that,
Steve? Scott and I haven't really talked about these dates, but he is very supportive of the concept.
He is, yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Yeah, he might be supportive of the concept. Seems to say still a little earlier, that might waver his support.
Well, that gives you guys something to work with, but that may, that's a non-starter, I think, for us. That's just too much impact. And we were looking at a test that had no impact, you know, and a little bit of risk, but not, we're very low risk. Now I'm seeing it as a lot of risk.
So it sounds to me like we have two options. We can scrap the control, yank everything, one spill we get.
11, day after spill, or thereabouts, April 11 would be your day.
Or if we want to leave the control group in,
leave until June.
Pull the hydrofoils around April 11th and then pull the Denson and monitoring March.
June-ish.
June 15th.
Pick your favorite date in June. What's ours? When do we change summer operations? June 20th?
Yeah, I think it's
20th.
Yeah,
June
21st.
So, August?
Yeah, if you want to match it up, say June 21st.
There you go.
Hey, Eric or Jack, will there be any request for unit outages associated with that install?
Unit 11.
I was just
going to
say.
Unit 11.
It's going to be brown.
Yeah, I think we can get that. We can see run it with cover.
Yeah, that's a good thing for asking.
We're still trying to find out whether or not we need unit outages for boats in the VRZ when the corner collectors close.
Just the boat lowered inside the boom?
Yeah.
The last that we heard was that any time a boat was inside that boom, we had to have the corner flicker being hit. I don't know about the others.
Right. We have not heard whether we need an 11 and 12.
There's the one that went in the river. Yeah, it was the
I don't think you would, but that'll be a Dennis Schwartz chief of ops question for sure. But they're talking about lowering their boat inside the actual boom of the corner collector. So I think without 11 off, you should be fine. I was just curious. I'd seen reference to that, and it wasn't sure.
12.
Yeah.
That's 12, I think, is the question.
Yeah, I can't.
But I think, I mean, getting back to your comment, I mean, again, getting back to Spring Creek releases this time of year, here we are again. The idea there is we have the other beloved. Oh, I can't wait. We're going to talk about the change form again, but this would be another awesome nuance to this whole conversation is, oh, if you could go ahead and just take
the release
unit powerhouse due to the
17th of April.
Midpoints, and our response was, yeah, we're going to go ahead and not have it. Anyway, it would just be another enjoyable nuance to the whole conversation. The tapestry, the woven tapestry of Bonneville.
We may have.
What else is going on? Are you going to dredge in there or something? Something else? Do some erosion repair? Something? Something else?
Well, I mean,
can't take the whole powerhouse down.
What do you got, John?
Well, I just want to let everybody know we are still trying to develop a test plan for FGE and looking at Unit 14 this year.
All right. Anybody else want to throw something on top of that?
Well, yeah, just the beloved 105-110 conversation.
Excellent.
With corner
anything
collector.
Else we got?
Just so you're checking that too.
Let's just keep going.
Good.
Annual maintenance, annual dredging.
Dredging, yeah, we got some dredging.
Because you don't need to do, you don't need to do anything for a trash rack. You've got to dredge. You do realize, I'm okay.
I encourage you to bring that up. That would, I'd like to know really why you can't do that first thing. Give me some options.
Contractors set up, ready to go.
Whose fault is that?
Yours.
It's yours, Paul. It's somebody above
you
our
pay grade.
I heard that. I want to know who. Throw it back in his face. But, okay, so there's.
In terms of pushing it out.
Do we lose a year? Do you lose a month? A day and a half?
You'd have to, we'd have to check on what the contractors would have anything else scheduled for that same time period. They committed to us for this time period right now. I don't know what their availability is much later.
Okay. Go back, come up with a new plan, send it out to us, whatever you think is the best. We'll send comments back on that.
Okay.
No comments.
Okay. All right. Sound good? Any other questions? Great. Let's go on to the next one. John Day, South Fish Turbine, stainless steel, elastomer sealant, 2-week delay, extension.
Oh, okay. So this is for Natalie Richards. I'm going to recapitulate the previous two F-bombs. And there were two questions. There were two questions or concerns for from the previous meeting. One was for the smell duration, and this was disposed of, I believe, by Kevin Hayes responding to about the method which is being applied here, because we're talking monolith joints, first of all. Those are not just minor joints, you know, they're not using any grout. They're using actually, I believe, copper as the material. But the critical information provided in that memo...
It's not copper.
What?
It's metal. I think it's copper. But anyway, but the thing... That doesn't matter anyway. But there is a rubber dam on the fishery side, which doesn't penetrate. The water cannot penetrate whatever they're putting into the joint.
You're telling me the water doesn't penetrate the John Day Dam?
No, it won't. That's exactly, exactly the purpose. Anyway, so, and this is something which is not necessarily the outage or the extension is not necessarily planned for, but in case of unexpected, Natalie wants to have that extra 2 weeks, so it's kind of a safety margin, you know, because she will do, most likely the work will be done by the end of February, but in case of complications and unexpected. So I think the smell issue has been disposed of. So there is no smell issue due to the methodology as described by Kevin Hayes.
So you're not doing the one, because in your page 11 you talk
about... Right. And the second concern from Gary was bay to open at 1.6 to provide additional attraction during this extension, if it happens, to the North Fishway.
Right.
And obviously this could help... to attract fish closer to that entrance, but there's really, I don't think there's any experimental proof that this is necessary. There was a letter provided by Mike Langsley from, I believe, University of Idaho.
I don't buy it because none of these studies have been done with power with south ladder off.
Correct.
Off. That's what I'm talking about. If you're going to shut off the south ladder, in other words, you don't have it
moisture,
you have only the north ladder. Well, how much traction flow?
Diddly poo.
Zip.
Well, it's 2,000, 3,000 CFS.
It is?
Because it's
at that time
triple
of year, in March?
Yeah, it's triple the previous baseline, which we used to have with the old configuration, with the old pumps.
Oh, for the attraction flow.
For the attraction flow.
Right, right.
The attraction flow is fine, but you don't have any additional
attraction flow over there for those. So I'm saying this is not the situation that everybody studied.
Right.
It's not what the FFU studied. It's not what University of Idaho studied or anybody else. It's a situation that's different because your project isn't set up as it normally would be.
Okay.
And so I'm saying because of that,
you
should mitigate during those 2 weeks some attraction spill on that north side for steelhead. And this is an Oregon thing that I would like you guys kind of jump on this one, because this is one where we've had troubles in the past.
You got beat up on.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot of fish going up to the John Day River at that time of the year.
Isn't that BPA decision to mitigate?
Well,
that's water.
It's my... It's a position to ask for.
How much spill? I mean, you're doing a coordination form, and I'd say in a coordination form, I would think we would identify that as a potential source of weakness.
Right.
If you're only going down to one ladder, I think you want to make sure you have good adequate passage in at times, so additional spill over there, pick your favorite number, would be advantageous to help attract more adults if there's only one ladder.
Yeah, because you do have steelhead that are trying to get to their spawning areas at that time of the year, and we know John Day fish.
So what we normally do at John Day is, after the spill season ends annually, is we spill at 1.6, one stop, open, day two.
I think like 50%
of the river. Well, I mean, again, that's what stopped out of working. And you guys aren't getting the point here. The point is, your south ladder is down.
Right.
It's not there. It's not working.
Right.
Where's the flow going? To the south side. All your flow is there.
Yes.
And so for that period of time, without that ladder running, you are going to delay whatever fish are trying to get where they want to go at that time. Who's out there? It's going to be steelhead trying to get to the John Day River or whatever. So we want to make sure we have sufficient passage for those fish. I don't know how much spill it's going to take to do that, but I would say that at that time, for those 2 weeks, you would want to spill several KCFS, not
1.6.
Can you ramp a powerhouse to that side, too? Run a powerhouse on that side, too? So you're not running powerhouse on the south side?
It means prioritizing it to the south.
Yeah, but your entrances on that end are...
I know it's
going
a long
over.
Ways away, but...
I'm
just thinking John Day River usually is very split coming out. I mean, you have John Day River flow. I mean, if John Day River is putting out a lot of sediment, you see John Day, or I mean the south ladder, really muddy, north ladder not. So you do have a split there, and if you're concerned about John Day fish, it's going to be a struggle to get them all the way over the north.
What happens with that flow coming out of that side, remember there's skeleton bays, there's all kinds of stuff there before you get to the north end.
Yeah.
The flow tends to go down the thalweg, or it's a split thalweg, and it tends to stay in the south side, and stay south side of those islands.
That's right.
And the spill does a good job of going to the north side.
Right,
but
just
I don't think,
that
if this was McNary, it would be different.
I agree, it wouldn't hurt. We can change the unit priority during that time, too, for the north.
Yeah, it wouldn't do any harm, right?
It wouldn't do any harm.
So we need to coordinate this with BPA and come back. Can get approval.
Okay.
I think this puts pressure on getting done before March.
Yeah, or impossible shift the schedule.
BPA's question was, what steel that are we worried about? Where are they going?
The plan is to complete, the current contract plan is to complete this work by the end of February.
Right.
That would be ideal.
That's not
going to
happen.
No. So BPA's concern was that...
Why do you say that, Tammy? Is there something specific that you know about it? Or is it just Murphy?
It has been suggested that that is not going to happen. It has been suggested. And that we will need the 14 days
in
March.
So you know more about this then?
No, I just hear the just alarms. That's all.
Birds talking. Yeah, okay. Well, then it's going to be an issue.
So I guess what kind of flow are you talking? 2.5, 3.
And BPA is going to want to know, does it have to be all day? Can it be just in those morning hours to get fish over there? I've already had this conversation with Benton.
I don't have any answers. And
an hour before light?
I like Trevor's. Half the powerhouse, all day long, 24/7.
That's where we start.
Okay.
That's our opening position.
Well, I mean, what are we doing here? We're trying to put these fish over to that site. For those 2 weeks, I would say at least 10 KCFS. I'd say you want to start at about 4 in the morning.
An hour before daylight.
And then you can run it you may not have to run all day, you know, maybe
a couple hours before sunset.
Yeah, which is that time of the year is going to be about 6 o'clock.
So 10K, 4 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yeah, daylight hours.
Is that minimum daylight time?
I just would start, I would shift it earlier than daylight hours by an hour or two to give that staging time, give them a chance to figure out where to go.
Yeah, but what about that FFU report? Should the official take basically the whole day to stage?
I know.
Like I said, totally different scenario.
Yeah,
you don't have any.
Very different situation, but I know, Trevor, I'd rather have 24 hours still.
I mean, that's what I start with.
Then you don't risk it.
So 10K for 24 hours?
We only have Bay 2 open only for during daylight.
I recognize that, but those are, I think that's probably throw more
pacer screening than this.
Then we can go.
This is a different situation. We don't have the power.
Right.
If you really want to do everything you can to pull fish over there during that period of time, it's critical time for steelhead. You know it is.
You got to get the withers on.
All right, we're going to bring this one back.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, this one's coming up.
Yeah.
All right. Next.
Okay.
Next. Almost 1 o'clock.
So the next one is Scott Fielding. I know that there's been some preliminary discussion out there, and we're going to let Scott do the introduction. This has been here before. So
we know.
This is the second round here at FPOM, and... The background is that they're trying to plan ahead. Obviously, what they're planning for is still out there long term, but they will be doing some contracting this year. And so this is the one that I was alluding to, that people need to think a little bit more broadly even than what Scott's going to talk about, because we start to coincide with the year that Wayne mentioned earlier when we're going to have Unit 1 out for rehab potentially.
I know, that's why I was...
So, I guess I want, you know, I've been being asked after this year at Lord Granite that I bring things like this to people's attention so that we have adequate discussion as we make determinations of path forward. So I just want to, with that, I'll let Scott talk.
So, in order to take this... To upgrade this collection channel from 6 feet to 9.5 feet, we're going to have to mine out the channel. So to avoid trying to do this in 3 or 4 unwatered work windows, we propose to start this in August of 2015 to March of 2016. So we have continuous concrete mining, and we're able to get this collection channel to the proper width. Instead of having interim operations, if we don't do this and only do it in unwatered work windows, we would just shut the collection channel off, pull the ESBSs, and spill over the RSW. So, of which I've had conversations with Scott Benton.
I'm sure you have.
I mean, in the long term, this is an upgrade for fish survival at Lower Granite. And
no, I'm just putting the two and two together. We're potentially going to have Unit 1 out this whole time as well.
Right. Well, you'll be taking it out 6 weeks after he would start. You're going to take it out because your recommendation today was September 15th.
Yeah.
He wants to start August 1st.
So are you talking 24 hours to load an RSW?
No, sorry. 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Is that true in August if we meet the spill trigger and the new buy-off? Still triggers met, you would still RSW beginning in August.
Beginning in September. So August spill would remain the same.
Because with the new buy-off, it may not.
What happens if you hit, what did you get the spill trigger?
Spill trigger.
Can you remind me what the spill trigger, the new spill trigger was again?
Well, I don't know if it's been flown to the
Well, what's the buy-off is 300 fish for, less than 300 fish for 3 months.
Which is issues have been identified with this, so I don't know what it's actually going to be, but it likely be some kind of trigger.
That's what the current trigger is.
Scott, my understanding is that spill would remain. Even if there was this spill trigger that came on, spill would remain because the bypass system is out of service when usually it is on.
So up till September?
Yeah, till September.
And we have RSW.
From September to the middle of December, you would have RSW spill for 12 hours per day, allowing for
maybe juveniles in the month of September, October, November, and adult fallback up
until the welcome back.
Good timing.
Where have you been?
Are your ears burning?
Nothing if not this.
No.
Oh. Shit out.
Yes.
So why don't we, Scott, why don't you come up to speed quickly that Scott Fielding is talking about the Lower Granite outage in 2015.
Okay.
And there's been some specific questions about, Bill Hevlund just asked that it was his understanding that spill would continue throughout August, irregardless of whether or not there was a new spill trigger in the 2014 biop, and then you would go to the RSW 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. through December 15th. Is that...
That's what you've been kicking around. Have you guys agreed? Have you guys reached that, or are you still shopping in-house?
Well, we're still seeing what the it is, but that's in the ballpark, that's reasonable.
What was the hours again?
6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Or this would be for juvenile passage?
Juveniles and adult fallback.
Adult fallback protection.
It may not be the RSW if you don't have the flow. It gets back to what's the flow of the river at the time. You're going to need to have a unit on in August. And if you have 17 plus a unit, sometimes we don't get that flow.
Well, the problem is you're not going to have, it won't be 17 because unit 1 is going to be out then. No, we have unit 1 because unit 1 comes off in September 15th.
Right.
I'm going to take a sabbatical.
I think there needs more irons in the fire.
2015, you can take a little
while. I was just thinking about the 6 a.m. 6 p.m. is daytime, right?
Right.
And the juveniles migrate at night.
What are we worried about? Is it adults or juveniles?
Exactly.
See, after September, I'm more worried about adults.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Kind of slim.
So we'd be passing adults.
If you want to give the adults a safe route, you don't have a screen system to protect the fallbacks. So unit 1 is 17, and then, so basically unit 1 you keep on, and then whatever else, you either spill or use RF 7.
And that's normally what happens in August.
If we're operating
WP,
though, unit 1 wouldn't be on.
It would be 2,
Unit 1 with special equipment, but
not
necessarily
operating
in the spring.
Well, unit 1 is supposed to be. That's what the long term is always supposed to be on, but you're saying to save it from first on, last off.
So this is something you could kick around.
Yeah, we're going to have to think about that. But
you're going to know that it's going to be like a roof repair. You'll only have it for the
nightmare.
First 6 weeks, and then, you're going to have to shift
have
to something else.
You'll have it until when flows ever drop below. Pick your favorite number.
Wasn't it 30? Wasn't that the magic number?
34.
34K
is a killer number.
34.
What I need to know, though, is can I get concurrence to shut the collection channel off August 15th or August 1st so we can get these in the specs
for
the contract?
And then we can go through. I'm saying, if you have the protected spill and you have an RSW and that kind of stuff, then I'm fine with you. You've got other major protection. Now, you can come back and say, no, we're going to give you a 2K spill and enjoy. Then I'm probably going to say, no, that's not enough protection. So I kind of need to know that what has been talked on the table is generally what's going to occur.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to have a little more finality about that, but that's
sure. I mean, we're still worried about what's the real cost of this and the overall, fire the gun and give it the green light.
Yeah.
Still isn't exactly.
I say give it the green light and then we can work out for
a bit.
Oh, that's $67 million. Oh, no.
It's just water.
Yeah. We've been through it about once or twice.
You know, the staggering price tag is not the spill. So it's the structures.
The $35 million for first year.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm sure it's only going to be 35.
Yes.
It's like the Minto project.
Still will
only accept $2 million.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Times two.
Yeah.
Wow. But no, you're in the right ballpark.
If you guys are committed to that, then I'm probably okay with this as an interim operation. And you and I share the same concerns about the overall cost of this project of the Lower Granite bypass. Of like, wow.
Yeah, he
might eclipse the Frederick's wall.
Mm-hmm. The $19 million wall?
Yeah.
Are we worried about the Dells anymore?
No, but I mean, that was the initial estimate.
Yeah, I know the $19 million, I was looking for the 19,
it's
really.
Done. Mm-hmm. It is done. $62 million later.
Don't think about the money.
Yes.
It's the result.
It's like driving that brand new car. You don't worry about it.
So it was a $60 million wall.
Yeah.
So do you have what you need?
I think so. You do, Scott. You have a path forward. We're going to say that, I guess we're hearing a thumbs up for this, but we kind of have some finality that we need for BPA to give you the official thumbs up on this. And then the only thing we don't have in here right now is anything about the unit priorities, but that's all stuff we could deal with when we get there. Yeah. You at least know the scenario that in September, now the 15th, you know, one will go out. So we'll have that period to deal with. So great.
I just want to be able to go back and tell the PDT that yes, we can have it August 1st. We can dewater that and start the mining.
Yeah, and so it ends December 15th, right? That's the end of all the spilling stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Then you'll be done by
March.
March.
Around here.
Sounds
good.
Okay, just
to
check.
Okay.
And I do have Noah's engineering.
So just for transparency.
On adult passage and powerhouse operations, and we have enough to maintain powerhouse. So.
Adaptively manage this bill.
Well, I mean, you're always going to have 11.5 or 12 going to the powerhouse if you have a unit on that's either number two or three of the BLHs.
Yeah.
BLHs,
before they break. But otherwise, you're at 14.5 for the minimum for the other three.
Right, but I guess that's my little piece of transparency. So the vision operation would become September 1 when you'd normally stop spill. You would continue with just the RSW spill rate. If you couldn't achieve that through the RSW because it had to be closed, the idea would be you just go min-gen and then you flatten it out or
spill
however.
Whatever the
rest. Right, I just wanted to make sure because the expectation wouldn't be you continue 17K and then you'd be... Okay.
We need to figure out exactly how we'd want to spill. Do we want a flat spill? Do we want a bulk spill?
But it would just be min-gen spill rate.
They're supposed to have a fancy new model.
Yeah, is that model? We're going to work at that at the model. How we would... Right. Still that 7K CFS.
Good. Okay.
If you have 70, you could use it.
If you have 6, you can't.
Yeah.
Okay. But I mean, if you want training spill, you need more than 7. That seems to be what the minimum goal of the topic.
So,
but Bill said we'll adaptively manage this as we are doing construction.
Collaboratively.
I think we're going to want to evaluate pretty well because I don't want to come all the way down the road and have to like Maddie try to adapt.
I do.
I know you love
it. I want to. I want mayhem. Yeah, mayhem. Regional consensus mayhem. Yeah, regional consensus.
That's what the M stands for.
You got your cheap bungee cords or something.
Thanks.
Anything else on this?
I love it. But when's the next check-in on this? What's the next step that we have to wrap? What's next on that particular project?
Are we going to have a fitter wig up there?
Yeah, we'll have several things on the fitter wig agenda for Granite.
Yeah, Tractor, remind me to take a look, make sure Celts are in the new design for Little Grand Bypass. I got my Celt guys came and whacked me on that when I said, I'll check.
How do you mean?
Well, I'm assuming in the new bypass system, we're going to set up a better way to extract Celts from the bar system we currently have, where the guys come down, net them, and throw them in somewhere. The thought is to try to make that a better pass-through system.
Yeah, unfortunately, in that sense, will be part of phase two that's yet to be scoped out fully.
So we're still going to have that delightful...
That's the bait.
So at phase one, we're not even going to take care of that delightful dewatering structure. Oh, awesome.
Here goes those credits.
Separator.
Yeah, separator.
The separator structure in phase one. Anyway, more to come at fitter wig on that.
Fitter wig.
It's really a fitter wig.
Yeah.
Nice. When is the analysis of the 10 versus the 14-inch openings going to be done? Did we do the testing this year?
Dave.
Okay.
Be there, be square.
Okay.
All right. Fish passage plan. There's some dates for you to check out.
I received a lot of change forms from districts. They're in the process of being posted. If you have any further change forms, get them to me by the 13th of December. And I'll have those posted by the end of the year.
One's going to look really familiar to last year.
Did you have the AFF trash raking change form? Do you have anything on that?
For
shad raking at Bonneville.
I don't know. It's been submitted. I haven't seen it. There's quite a few I'm still going through. So.
No, that one hasn't been submitted because I haven't heard what elevation or anything like that.
Dave Trachtenberg has left the conference.
What about Bonneville AWS trash? Have we got a change form in for that yet?
Yes, we do.
All right. Well, let's take a look.
Any other comments?
What do we need, Tammy, to get that raking protocol elevation? Is that all you need?
Just the language, what you want to see. I mean, I have the basic, you want the raking protocol in there, but I don't know what level are we going to mark it on the wall. Or
okay.
Just
kind of we're putting staff page in there so we can monitor it better.
Can I use some graffiti spray?
No graffiti. So yeah, just let me know what you want and I'll throw the form together.
How about 70s, man?
Similar to
anything else on the Fish Passage plan?
It'd be nice to have a copy of any outside the core Fish Passage plan changes to the respective district. At the same time, you send them to...
I'll forward them to Tammy again.
Good. I appreciate that. All
righty.
I think you're fine. I think the two I've sent in are going to be more smack and portal discrepant.
Pretty good.
Okay, 12 are potential change forms coming. Take a peek at them.
At the FPP.
Yeah.
Yeah,
at the end of November.
Whenever the draft is
settled. And we did
answer
4.8. Carl has come off.
Let's get that straight. Yeah, I saw that. Okay.
You can review it.
Task group updates.
Let's get the. Is there? Yeah.
It's on there. Yeah,
next
the 31st. Avian
is the 20th. Sea lion, is there anything from sea lions?
Fur. On the Fish Passage plan, the official comment period. I don't think I heard that. December 31 to...
We typically have the change form rodeo third week of January where
right.
We sit down. So,
we have that until that rodeo?
Yeah, I think we'll get through 90% of them at that.
I think
we'll
do that. It's on the calendar.
Anything,
look at the calendar.
I think the drop dead date for including in the printed version is mid-February. But, I mean, it's a living process. If there's any change. Right.
Do we have that date in January already?
No, but we should get it scheduled.
I don't see it.
Why don't we have a request to get
that
scheduled?
Oh, yeah, because it's filling up already.
Yeah, let's get that.
How about the 17th or 24th? Take your pick.
17th.
17th
is special.
Being
having
FPD.
That's not on my calendar.
January.
Who has the Erdick trip?
And I won't be there on the 24th either.
That's not a good day.
January 17th
is Friday. Moving on. What date?
What's the 24th?
About 20... The 21st.
What is the 21st?
Thursday.
Well, that's fine.
Day after Martin Luther King.
Is that Tuesday?
It's a Tuesday. Yeah,
no,
after holiday.
You said November? Sorry.
No,
January.
Yeah.
23rd.
Oh, 21st.
You guys will be in the afternoon.
Do it Wednesday.
All right.
Travel
we
that morning.
22nd.
Okay. Do it 22nd.
22nd.
Are we doing the both on the same day?
Okay. Yeah. That's perfect because that would be a TMT, so it would be a tit for tat. And you could feel better about it. Posting it for Wednesday,
sure
so I'd feel better. Go for it.
Really?
22 is Wednesday.
Well, I kind of need Lisa there, so if she says TMT.
No, I burned you. You didn't hear that.
I know what's going on. Yeah. He said 21.
I do 22.
21 is day after holiday. I might be driving back from the call. So.
Okay.
All right, so we're doing it the 22nd?
22nd.
So, I mean, perfect. Are we even having a team meeting that day?
Yeah.
Well, I feel karmically better because we rolled FPOM for the year-end review, which is bad.
Time
we haven't rolled it yet.
We haven't.
Okay, fair enough.
That's next on the agenda.
All right.
Rolling FPOM.
We'll do Portland.
Rolling FPOM.
I have no excuse.
So,
22nd it is?
22.
Yes, 22nd. Now, because he's saying a tit for a tat here, TMT has your annual review on the next FPOM date.
Well, I'll skip that. I'll do that FPOM instead.
No, you can't. You're giving a presentation.
Oh, I'm
so... Who comes to TMT in?
The 12th
you should
of December,
go.
So
you
can move it to a different day. Would the 11th work? So you're already, some people are already in town, like Russ could show up.
So this is December? We're
So you're saying the 11th?
No, I think they're meeting on the 11th and 12th.
11 and 12, meeting on Wednesday. Excuse me, there's generally a meeting on Wednesday, and then the standalone meeting, I thought it was a Tuesday, but it was a Thursday.
Do you think you'll really need a meeting on Wednesday?
Well, they usually have a check-in meeting just because there's always, imagine that there is some odd thing that we didn't anticipate happening.
That never happens.
It never happens. So that usually happens. Well, anyway, so there's usually some short blah, blah, blah check-in.
Friday the 13th.
Ooh. Perfect.
Right, wear your black outfit.
My other black outfit?
No. But the the 11th does work for you? No.
I don't know.
How did that just get on my calendar?
There's the energy monitoring.
I did. It's there.
Gold star. On that day, on the 11th. How about the 13th? So some other, I don't know.
13th doesn't work.
Yeah, but the 13th I'm out.
10th? 10th?
Do we have December to have 10th? A December meeting? We didn't last year. We had a call.
That's why I'm just, how about we do that? We just do a call because TNT will never go, will not go past the afternoon. We can have it after the check-in call.
Sure.
I'll already be at the bar, but that's
fine. Can I join you?
Yeah, the bar opens at noon.
So what are you suggesting?
The shoots conference room on
TNT. We'll have a call TNT in the morning. Have a December TNT F-bomb call on the first 1 o'clock. Okay. Have like an hour call.
Right, the 11th.
Right,
it's just gifted.
I'm just saying, I would read it.
Placeholder.
If this is a placeholder conference call, or did the shoots conference?
No, I'm just saying, placeholder in case we need to talk about it.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Which
is that one? 11th and 1.
11th and 1 if it needs.
We take the week off. So.
I'm emailing that out.
Right now. Conference call.
Taking the week off.
I'm going to
pops up. All right, good luck with that.
Sorry, Bern. Perfect.
All right.
Perfect timing. It's afternoon.
What day is it?
The 11th.
This the 11th in the afternoon.
Hell yeah!
I don't know. I've never not heard of that.
It's the division. It's a division.
Do you have a TDG monitoring?
I have no idea. What was that?
It's a division meeting.
Is that a
dissolved gas monitoring program?
Oh, okay. I didn't know about that. Is that a Laura Hamilton?
Laura didn't tell me about it. It was a friend of
mine. Catherine Johnson.
Yeah.
Oh. So she's doing a, you said Wednesday afternoon?
I don't know what Wednesday afternoon is.
Okay.
Have left the conference. Have left the conference.
It's funny. Okay.
Have left the conference.
If I hear that, we're going to be there.
Okay. Well, now what you know, too, so I don't know if you heard enough.
Have left the conference.
I've been successful.